Chapter 5, King Midas. Midas was king of Phrygia. He was the son of Gordias. Midas, like his father, was a good king, but he was not as smart as his father. His biggest fault was that he often spoke too quickly and without thinking. Midas was very fond of gardening. One day, among the bushes of his rose garden, he found a strange creature passed out from drinking too much wine. This creature was a satyr, half goat and half man. Midas recognized this satyr as Silenus. Silenus had acted as a father to Dionysus, the god of wine. Dionysus's real father was Zeus. A jealous Hera had caused the death of Dionysus's mother, so Zeus gave the infant Dionysus to the care of Silenus and other satyrs and river nymphs. When Midas realized who this satyr was, he entertained him with great hospitality. For 10 days and nights, Midas treated Silenus to great feasts of fruits, meats, and bread, always with plenty of wine. On the 11th day, Midas's servants brought word of the location of Dionysus's camp. He brought Silenus to Dionysus and restored him in safety to the god's care. Dionysus was impressed with Midas's actions. He offered Midas his choice of a reward, whatever he might wish. Without thinking, Midas immediately asked that whatever he might touch would change into gold. Dionysus agreed, but told Midas that it was a bad choice. Midas did not understand the god's warning and happily left Dionysus's camp. On his way home, Midas could not wait to put his new ability to the test. He could hardly believe his eyes when he pulled an oak twig off a tree and it became gold in his hand. He picked an apple from a tree and it became a perfect golden apple. In Midas's eyes, it was the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. The king was overcome with joy. As soon as he got home, he ordered his servants to prepare a splendid feast. He sat down at his table to eat with his daughter. To his horror, he soon discovered that he could not eat anything. Whatever he picked up turned to gold. In a panic, Midas almost fell down, and his daughter tried to help her father. As soon as she touched his arm, she became a golden statue. To Midas, this was not beautiful anymore. In a second, he hated this new gift of his. He hated himself for speaking so foolishly. He realized that he would die of starvation and loneliness. Quickly, he called to his servants and rushed out the door back to the camp of Dionysus. Midas arrived in the god's camp, relieved to find it still there. He begged Dionysus to remove the gift he had given, the gift that had become a curse. Dionysus smiled and said, "Go to the river Pactolus. Find the spring that is its source. Wash your body in this spring. Wash away your greed and your punishment. Then go home and find your daughter restored to flesh and bone." Midas did so. As soon as he touched the waters, the gold-creating power passed into them. The sand on the banks of this river became gold. This river passed through the land of Lydia. The Lydians became so rich from mining this gold that they invented gold coins to use as money. Afterward, Midas hated wealth and luxury. He took his family to live in the country, and he became a worshipper of Pan, the god of nature. Pan was an excellent player of his reed pipes. He played so well that he decided to challenge Apollo to a musical contest. Apollo accepted the challenge, and he and Pan chose Timaeus, a nearby mountain god, to be the judge. Timaeus cleared away the trees from his ears to listen, and the contest began. Pan blew on his pipes first, and with his charming melody, gave great satisfaction to himself and his faithful follower, Midas, who happened to be present. Then Timaeus turned his head toward the sun god, and all his trees turned with him. Apollo rose with his laurel crown on his head. In his left hand, he held a lyre, and with his right hand, he struck the strings. So beautiful was the harmony that burst forth that Timaeus immediately awarded victory to the god of the lyre. Everyone but Midas agreed with the judgment. Without even considering his place, Midas questioned Timaeus's decision. Apollo replied that Midas's ears were so depraved that they did not deserve to have human form. Suddenly, Midas felt his ears grow in length and become hairy. He realized that he could also move them in any direction. They had become a perfect pair of donkey ears. King Midas was horrified at this. Then he thought that it would be possible to hide his ears. From then on, Midas wore a large turban wrapped tightly around his head. No one discovered his secret, except, of course, his barber. Midas warned this servant never to tell anyone, but the hairdresser found the situation so funny he could not contain himself. One night he went into a meadow by himself. He dug a hole in the ground and whispered the story into this hole. When he finished, he covered the hole up. Before long, a thick bed of reeds grew up in that very spot. As soon as the reeds were tall enough to bend in the wind, they began to whisper the story of Midas's donkey ears. They still whisper this story every time a breeze passes over them. Aphrodite and Adonis. Aphrodite was playing with her boy, Eros, one day when she accidentally wounded herself with one of his golden arrows. Before the wound healed, she saw Adonis and fell in love with him. She followed Adonis and kept him company. Aphrodite, who used to love to relax in the shade and make herself more beautiful, now hiked through the woods and over the hills, dressed like a huntress. She chased rabbits and deer or other game that was safe to hunt. She stayed away from wolves and bears. She commanded Adonis also to avoid such dangerous animals.
"Courage against the courageous is not safe," said Aphrodite. "Do not attack the beasts that are armed with weapons. Your youth and the beauty that charms me will not touch the hearts of lions and boars. Think of their terrible claws and great strength."
Having given him this warning, she climbed into her swan-driven chariot and drove away through the air. Adonis was too noble to listen to such womanly advice. His dogs had chased a wild boar from his lair, and Adonis wanted to kill it. Adonis threw his spear and wounded the animal in its side. The beast turned and ran at Adonis, who turned and fled. The boar was faster and caught the young man with its sharp tusks. In her chariot, Aphrodite heard the groans of her lover, and she turned her swans back to earth. As she drew near and saw Adonis's lifeless body covered in blood, she jumped from her chariot. Bending over her lover, she beat her chest and tore her hair. She said,
"Death will only have a partial victory. The memory of my grief will endure, and the memory of your death will be renewed each year. Your blood shall be changed into a flower."
As she said this, she sprinkled nectar on Adonis's blood. After an hour, a blood-red flower grew. This flower is short-lived. The wind blows the blossoms open, and afterward blows the petals away. Therefore, it is called the wind flower. It remains to remind the world of Adonis's youthful beauty and his tragic death. Apollo and Hyacinthus. Apollo was very fond of a boy named Hyacinthus. The sun god would play sports with the boy. One day, Apollo threw a stone disc into the air with strength and skill. The disc flew high and far. Hyacinthus was eager to grab it and throw it himself. But the disc bounced and flew back up to hit the boy on the forehead. Hyacinthus fell to the ground and bled too much. The god of medicine tried everything he knew to stop the blood and save the boy's life. It was in vain. Hyacinthus' head hung to the ground like the broken stem of a lily.
"If only I could die in your place," said Apollo. "You shall live with me in memory and in song. My lyre will sing of you, and you will become a flower painted with my regret."
As Apollo spoke, the blood which had fell to the ground rose up and became a flower. It resembled a lily, but was purple and silvery white. But this was not enough for Apollo. On the petals of the flower he wrote the words, "Ah, ah." In this way, he expressed his sorrow for the death of his young friend. Echo and Narcissus. Echo was a beautiful nymph and was fond of the woods and hills. She was a favorite of Artemis and followed the goddess in the hunt. But Echo had one fault. She liked talking, and whether in chat or argument, she always had to have the last word. One day, Hera was looking for her husband. She feared that Zeus was keeping company with the nymphs. Echo tried to delay Hera with talk until the other nymphs could escape. Hera was not so easily fooled. She became angry with Echo and said,
"You will lose the use of that tongue with which you have cheated me, except for one purpose. You are so fond of replying, so you will always have the last word. You will never speak first."
Echo soon found that she could not say anything she wanted to. She could only repeat what others said first. One day, Echo saw Narcissus, a beautiful young man, as he was hunting. She fell in love with him and followed. She wanted to speak to him, but she could not. She waited impatiently for him to speak first. At last, Narcissus became separated from his companions. He shouted, "Who's here?" Echo replied,
"Here."
Narcissus looked around, but seeing no one, called out, "Come." Echo answered,
"Come."
No one came, so Narcissus called again, "Why do you avoid me?" Echo asked the same question. "Let us join one another," said the young man. The maid answered with all her heart in the same words and ran to Narcissus. She tried to throw her arms about his neck, but he stepped back. "Hands off," he said. "I would rather die than let you have me."
"Have me," said Echo,
but it was in vain. He left her, and she went to hide her embarrassment in the darkness of the woods. From then on, she lived in caves and cliffs. Her body became skinny with grief until it faded away. Her bones became rocks. There was nothing left of her but her voice. She is still ready to reply to anyone who calls her and keeps up her old habit of having the last word. Narcissus was cruel to all women, not just Echo. One day, a maiden who was unsuccessful in attracting him prayed that he might someday feel what it was to be rejected in love. The goddess of vengeance heard this prayer and granted it. There was a clear spring that was never visited by animals or humans. It was never polluted by fallen leaves or branches. To this pool, Narcissus came one day, tired from hunting. He was hot and thirsty. He bent down to drink and saw his own image in the water. He thought it was some beautiful water spirit. He stood gazing at his own bright eyes. He fell in love with himself.
He reached his arms out to hug his new love, but the image disappeared as soon as he touched the water. After a moment, it returned. Narcissus could not tear himself away. He lost all thought of food or drink. He started to talk with his imaginary water nymph. "Why, beautiful being, do you ignore me?" said Narcissus. "You must be attracted by my face. The nymphs love me, and you yourself look at me with attraction." Narcissus's tears fell into the water and disturbed the image. As he saw it depart, he exclaimed, "Stay, I beg you! Let me at least look at you if I may not touch you." Narcissus could not leave. Slowly, he lost his health as his body shrank from hunger. Soon, his beauty was also lost. He wasted away and died. When his spirit passed over the river Styx, he leaned over the boat to look at himself in the waters. The nymphs, especially the water nymphs, mourned him. They prepared to burn his body in honor, but when they looked for it by the spring, they could not find it. In its place was a flower, purple inside and surrounded with white leaves. This flower bears the name and preserves the memory of Narcissus.